Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Enterprise, Business 100, Section 7 for Spring Semester 2015. Lecture 2, delivered on April 30, 2015. The title of this lecture is The Agency Dilemma.
Today, The Agency Dilemma. I brought up the term agent earlier in the semester with respect to a triad of terms, agent, broker, and dealer. In that context, the term agent refers to a representative of the seller. A broker would be a representative of the buyer, and a dealer represents himself or herself. This is a somewhat different way of using the term agent, although it still has the same context. I want to bring up a couple of quick pieces of terminology that I've brought up before, but I want to emphasize them now. One is the legal use of the term person. A person in law can be an individual, but it can be something other than an individual. If that thing, that entity, has some legal standing under the law, for example, in a contract, then we would refer to that entity as a person. That can go too far, as it did when the Supreme Court ruled several years ago that corporations are people with respect to the Constitution. This actually happens in language when a word that begins with a narrow definition begins to expand and then it takes over too much turf. And the Supreme Court fell into that error in thinking by saying, oh, well, corporations are persons, so they are people, so the constitutional rights of an individual apply to a corporation because it's a person too. And that has created all kinds of excitement in the world of politics, where now corporations can just shovel money at candidates just like individual citizens can. That was the ruling Citizens United several years ago. But that having been said, in our discussion and my lecture today, I will use the word person, which can mean an individual, but it could mean something other than an individual. That having been said, in today's lecture, an agent is a person who is charged under contract with maximizing the welfare, wealth, whatever you want to call it, the welfare of another person. And that other person is called the principal. And that's with P-A-L. So an agent is in some kind of an expressed, implied, written or oral contract with another person whose welfare the agent is supposed to maximize in some way. So, for example, the directors of a corporation are the agents of the shareholders as a body. The shareholders, the owners of the corporation, remember the shareholders are the owners. The shareholders are a person, Not individually in our context. Well, they are more broadly, but in the context of what I'm talking about now, the shareholders as a body are a person. They are the principal, and the directors of the corporation, the board of directors, are charged with maximizing the value of the shareholders' holdings in the corporation. There are many, many agency relationships in which you will engage in your lives, in which you have engaged in your lives. Agents sometimes, principal other times. And it is of great benefit to you as a person, as an individual, and as a business person to begin to frame relationships in terms of agency. Because almost all of them in your workplace, and many of them in your lives, are agency relationships. So, for example, using this definition of agent and principal, using this definition of agent and principal, what would you say in a parent-child relationship? Who is the agent and who is the principal?
I'd say the parent is the agent.
Exactly. The parent is the agent, the child is the principal. Because it is a parent's duty, it's an implied in law duty, under common law, that parent is there to maximize the welfare of that child. Okay, we can take this on. Let's try another one. Sir, in a marriage, who is the agent and, a man and a woman, who's the agent and who's the principal? Now, you be careful here because there are consequences to your body if you say it wrong. Who's the agent and who's the
principal?
Okay. Who's the agent and who's the principal?
I'd probably be the principal.
Uh-huh.
She'd be the agent.
You're the principal and she's the agent? Mm-mm.
No.
No? Ah. What would you say? In a marriage. Who's the agent? Who's the principal? Nope. It's actually in law. Who's the agent? Can you give it to me? No. Hey, here's where it gets difficult. Because, in fact, the man and the woman are both the agents, and the marriage is the principal. The marriage is nothing but a piece of paper, but it is a person under the law. It is the principle. The man and the woman are both bound by contract, implied in law, to maximize the welfare of the marriage. So in other words, you get married, and 2 days after you're married, you get a phone call from three of your old girlfriends who are inviting you to be the judge at their twerkathon. Indeed. What do you do as an agent?
Don't go.
That's exactly right. Find an excuse. And the thing, though, is that as an agent of the marriage, you are duty-bound to maximize the welfare of the marriage, and that would not maximize... Well, maybe it would. You'd be pretty damn frisky for a few days afterwards. But it doesn't work that way. You see, these contracts are implied... The ones that I've brought up so far are implied in law. Okay. Now, a soldier. A soldier in the United States Army. Is he a principal or is he an agent? He is an agent. Now, moving on from there, he is an agent. Who's the principal?
I guess that's all of the people that they serve and protect.
No.
No?
No. This is actually kind of unfair because you might not know the oath. You know the oath?
No.
Oh, okay. He is sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. In other words, the Constitution is the person. Remember, I told you that it is alleged that our former president, George W. Bush, said that when he was told that's unconstitutional, he said the Constitution is nothing but, quote unquote, a goddamn piece of paper. And I told you he is right. He is absolutely right about that. The Constitution does not have any life except through the duty of its agents to give it life. The marriage has no life except through the duties carried out by the agents, the parents, man and woman, to give it life. The child will not be alive without the intervention of the agents charged under law, common law. And statutory law, too, of course. You see, here's the thing, is that agency is going to dominate your world, and it has all along. You just didn't know it. But focusing it down and understanding that these agency relationships are all through social interactions, the life of a person in the society and the family, helps to clarify those relationships in very special ways. But we have to go on to something that is deeply, inherently flawed in the agency relationship. It's called the agency dilemma. The agency dilemma is actually quite straightforward. An agent has incentive to maximize its own welfare rather than that of the agent, rather than that of the principal. Rather than that of the principal. Again, the agency dilemma. The agent has incentive to maximize its own welfare instead of that of the principal. Now, I'm saying incentive. That does not mean that it will happen, but you cannot deny that any person will have some incentive to do what's best for itself instead of what's best for the principal. This is human nature. The very first lecture in this class, which sent one of the students up to file a formal complaint against me with the dean, was when I asked you, do you like food?
Yeah.
Do you like sex?
Yeah.
Well, that was offensive. But it's the reality of it. If you deny that this can happen, that this is part of the nature of the human animal, then you are missing the point of why we do business and how we have to do business. You see, every agent has incentive. That does not mean that every agent will violate the terms of agency contract. But we have to recognize that it is part of the battlefield of our lives. When we're the agents, we have incentive at least to do what we want instead of what's wanted by our bosses. And there are so many other places. You see, I'm the agent of my children. Someday, all of you, God help most of you, will have children. May God help the world after that. You have had a hugely difficult day at work. You drag your butt in. Oh, God. And you flop down in your chair. Oh, God. And there are your kids just bouncing around, tearing up, yelling, and just horsing around and making trouble and making messes. And there's a kid bouncing up and down on the couch. Now, you know what you're supposed to do as the agent of that child? You're supposed to run over, oh, come on, honey, let's get off the couch, let's go. I'm going to make you a really good, nutritious meal, and then we'll read some bookies and play some games together, and then I'll tuck you in with a story and all that. Oh, I love you so much. That's what you're supposed to do as the agent. You know what you're going to do? You're going to flop into your chair. Ah, you. You quit that. God damn it. Here, take my belt. Beat your ass and stand in the corner. You're bad. Go out there. There's some nuke and puke in the freezer. Put it in the microwave. Eat. Now, well, there's some TV. Don't watch anything. Oh, it's okay if you watch murder. Just don't watch sex. Yeah, there you go. God. That's what you're going to do. No, I'm sure you will. But you see, you have incentive not to do what is right for the child, to maximize. To maximize would be to put all of your time, your life into that kid. You're not going to do that. Well, I've got other things to do. Well, some of them are very important, but some of them you've just talked yourself into being important. We're going to talk about that in a little while, too, when we get to fiduciary relationships. But you see, that's the nature of us as people, as persons. Corporations are agents too. You can be a principal, but then you can also be an agent. It's an interesting dynamic, a hierarchy that can occur. But now, let's go on. You, sir, are driving your car out in the country. It's a bright, beautiful, sunny day, and you've got this smooth, straight country road. And I mean, it is just, oh, just straight, and you got this great car, and you pass this speed limit sign that says 55 miles per hour.
That's a suggestion.
In fact, that's a challenge. Can't go in no slower than 55. So you start putting your pedal to the metal, and it's faster and faster. And you hear a voice with a curiously Scottish accent in the back seat saying, "Warp 6, Mr. Sulu." And stars start streaming by you. You're just flying along. You're driving like a blind trout. Okay? I don't know what that means. I've never known, but I still say it anyway. But way up the road, in one of those spurs of driveway into a prairie field, you see a car there by the road. And wish I had 8 gears on this thing. And you're just roaring along. And you get a look, oh my God, there's a sheriff's deputy star on that car. Oh God. So what are you going to do? Oh yeah, you're going to slow that puppy down. Haven't you ever seen that? Everyone's driving like maniacs and they see a cop car up ahead, brake lights come on, and all of a sudden halos come around their heads, and they're just the finest upstanding Jesus lovers you ever met. Now I know, right? You know, it's all of us. For you know, we're going, oh, whoa, slow down here. Yeah, hi, officer. Okay, you're driving and you got your speed back down and you get closer. Oh God, the officer's standing outside of his car. He's probably got a radar gun. Wait a minute, he's not standing, he's stooped over. Oh my God, he's changing the tire on his car. What do you do?
Wait till he's out of sight.
No, you don't have to. You just accelerate right past him, wave at him, "Hi officer, how you doing?" You see, a contract is no better than two pillars. Pillar one, monitor. Monitoring. You cannot, as a principal, do anything about agency dilemma if you can't monitor behavior. But even if you can monitor behavior, the second pillar must be there too. Enforcement. If you have one but not the either of these two, you have no power over your agent. You have no power. Because if you can monitor but you can't enforce, you got nothing on the agent. Agent will do whatever he or she chooses, good or bad. If you can enforce but you can't watch, if you can't monitor, then you got nothing at the same time. A law that no one is watching, no one is monitoring. You're going to go to prison for 20 years, but if no one's going to watch people's behavior on this, then you got no law either. You have to have both of them in place. And also, you have to ask yourself, okay, how far do I go with monitoring and enforcement? How much is it going to cost me to monitor? How much is it going to cost me to enforce? If it costs more to monitor and enforce, then you're going to get in reduced agency dilemma problems. Well, why would you do it? I've seen many examples where you got laws in place, you got rules in the workplace, but it would cost too much. Opportunity cost, equipment, monitoring, surveillance, yelling at people, firing people. You aren't going to do it just because it just costs too much to do it. That's something that happens a lot in parent-child relationships. It happens in the workplace. You know, we have a policy against people standing around the water fountain. But what are you going to do? Peek out of your boss door every 10 minutes to see if someone's standing there? You're not going to do that. Well, we have a policy against you taking paper clips home. What are you going to do? Count every paper clip every night? And then you're going to fire someone you were the last person in there and we're 3 paper clips short. No. You see, monitoring and enforcement are actually the shapers of how much you control the agency problem. But notice something that I was talking about there. The principal is responsible for the behavior of the agent. The principal is the one who is what we call the respondeat superior. Well, the agent's doing what the agent is supposed to do, or something like it. But if the agent screws up, then the vicarious liability is carried by the principal. Insurance can cover this to a certain extent, but this is why monitoring and enforcement. Well, he wasn't supposed to be doing this. That's not good enough. You as the principal are responsible for making sure that he or she does what is appropriate. Well, he was operating outside of our rules and regulations. Here's where I give you a case from some years back. This one is out of West Virginia, which should indicate right there to you that this is going to be interesting. A bar in West Virginia, relatively well known in its area, was attended every night by quite a few good old boys and women with hearts of gold and things like that. And it was a fun place. They had a lot of hooting and hollering, music playing, darts were. And there was a bartender there who was actually quite well known in the area because he was incredibly good with throwing knives. West Virginia, step one, knives, step two. Well, one night he was doing this incredible thing, tossing a couple of knives, and he took one of them, a Bowie knife, and he threw it at one of the dartboards, and, you know, he could hit dead on from quite a ways away. Well, he threw it, and one of the patrons, an old-timer, a grizzled, tough old bird from the Appalachian Hills, walked right in front and turned and looked just as the knife came at him, went into his left eye. Well, a couple of things are playing out here. One, the old guy was fairly drunk, and two, he was tough, and they were freaking out. We'll call an ambulance, and he said, "You ain't gonna call an ambulance. I'll drive myself over to the hospital," and he did. And he pulled his truck in, and he walked into the emergency room where the receptionist, not even looking at him, she was busy with her paperwork, pushed a clipboard at him, "Fill it out, and we'll call you when we got someone to look at you." And he just stood there, and he said, "Lady, ask me if this hurts." She looked up at him, and that was when she went to a happy place inside herself. She just passed out. There was a guy standing there with a knife sticking out of his face, his eye. And so they were attending to her because she passed out. And then they started worrying about him. And at the end of the day, they pulled the knife out. And fortunately, given that he was a West Virginian, the knife could not penetrate far enough in to reach brain tissue. I shouldn't do that. Okay, but look, the bottom line was that, okay, the bar said, we're not liable for this because that bartender was not supposed to be throwing knives. Well, you see, yes, they were, because they knew damn well he did this, even though it was in the rules and regulations that he was, you know, no knife throwing, or no spitting, no cussing, and all that. But the fact that he had been doing this, and they knew damn well that that brought a crowd, and they would let him do it, because the owners were most certainly respondeat superior. They carried the vicarious liability because they were monitoring. The owners weren't there. Enforcement, they weren't enforcing anything. So, of course, they were liable. They were the respondeat superior, and they had to pay for this guy to have the knife pulled out and a glass eye put in. On the bright side, he recovered fully. And he had only two-dimensional vision after that, of course, but he was from West Virginia. How many of them have three-dimensional thinking anyway? So, I probably should edit this out, but any of the podcast. But anyway, know that. The principal is responsible. Well, my subordinate screwed this up. You do that to me as your boss, and I'm going to say, no, you are responsible. I don't want to hear about this underling of yours who screwed up. It's you who screwed up. Now, you can yell at him all you want, but that's after I have eaten your butt for what you did. Okay? And you remember that when you're in the workplace. Don't be shifting the blame. If you're the principal and that's the agent who's supposed to serve you, then what that principal does wrong is what you have done wrong. Period. That's why sometimes you have to be kind of a hard ass as a manager. Because you've got to decide, okay, how much do I want to trust my subordinates? Because if they do something wrong, I'm going to take the blame for it. And if I am a mature person, I am going to take the blame. I'm not going to point to someone under me. Okay, now, this agency thing. Obviously in the business world, we have to bring things down to some kind of list and essentially to liquidated damages and all that, as I talked to you in the last lecture. We have to assign cost. What does the agency dilemma cost when an agent does what he or she wants to do instead of what he or she is supposed to do for the principal? We break that agency cost into four different categories. Agency cost. The first is obvious, direct theft. Direct theft. The agent who steals from the employer, from the principal. And it's a classic problem. We know that it's a huge problem. Employees stealing from their companies. Direct theft. There are so many different ways. When I got into that kind of world of monetary security, I was shown these videos. It just kind of blew me away, all the different ways that employees can steal. But that's not certainly not the only place where direct theft happens. Obviously, embezzlement of funds is a classic example of direct theft. Enron's top executives were just skimming money off and moving it to offshore accounts for themselves. And, that was shareholder money. That was the shareholders' money, the principal's money that they were taking. Literally, physically, money being stolen. Okay? But there are so many examples. And to some extent, there is so much talk about how employees steal from their employers. It is a horrible problem. Hundreds of billions of dollars a year. Well, that's one side of it, yeah. But let's talk about the executives who steal from their companies, too. Sometimes they do it through embezzlement, but there are other ways that can that represent agency costs. The second one that I'll bring up is shirking. The second agency cost after direct theft is shirking. Avoiding duties as an agent. Avoiding duties as an agent. I always bring up the classic manager who brags, "My desk is clear every night when I go home." Well, that's because that manager picks things off his desk and puts them on the desks of his subordinates to handle. I met a guy who was classically like this. Every night after everyone had gone, he would just take anything that was left on his desk and he put it on everyone else's desk, his subordinates. And so it was theirs. When they walk in the next morning, oh, hell, what the hell is this? Yeah, shirking. Standing around the water fountain and chatting instead of doing your work, shirking. Just all kinds of ways that you can avoid doing what you are supposed to do as the agent of some principal. And it is a massive, massive problem. Chatting in the office, that's shirking. Coming to work a little late, shirking. Going home early, shirking. These are all part of the agency cost structure. The next one is perquisites. What we call perks. Extracting costs as a benefit of position. Extracting costs as a benefit of position. The classic executive who has a desk that is so big it could qualify as a landing strip on an aircraft carrier. The giant leather chair so his butt doesn't get sore when he's doing executive type things. That is perquisites. Those are perquisites. And there are so many of them. Not that many years ago, I was at a great dinner with a group of executives. It was a wonderful time, and they said, one of them said to me directly, he said, "Why do you do this teaching? You're not being paid anything compared to what we would pay you. You could take over. We've got an open position for a comptroller. We would love to have you do that." And I said, "No, you wouldn't. You see, because you take company jet to go to your meetings, face-to-face meetings. You go to five-star restaurants. You stay in five-star hotels. Here's the deal. Greyhound goes to almost every city in the country." Uh-huh. "And you know what? McDonald's and Denny's are always there for you. You don't need meals at a fancy restaurant. You're no better than anyone else. And finally, you know, as far as hotels go, you stay in these incredibly great hotels, Marriott's and things like that. I've got Motel 6s all over the country I could have you stay at. Matter of fact, I've got some even lower cost motels, and they have those beds that have the quarter machine beside them." Uh-huh. You talk about a benefit. Yeah. Oh, that was just, we're executives. We have to put on this style. We have to show that we are big people, important people. No, you don't. It's a perquisite. That is shareholder money, because you're expensing that up on the income statement. That money that you spend for yourselves and all these nice things that you do that never gets to the net income line, in other words, to the money that is available to the shareholders as dividends and reinvestment in the company. That's money you've taken from them that was theirs. That's agency cost. That's perquisite. It is massive. My jaw just drops at all of these people who, business people, "I have to fly here to meet with them." No, you don't. Call them. Send them an email. Stop that. Well, I got to stay in a hotel that's nice. No, you don't. That's shareholder money you're using. Now, you have to use some, clearly, to make the business function. But you're going to see in your business lives so much perquisite action that it will make you sick until it's yours, and then you'll be okay with it. The last one is incompetence. The inability to carry out the agency duties. The inability to carry out the agency duties. Incompetence. Have you ever, any of you, worked with someone who was box of rocks stupid? It is normal. Now, there's even more to it than that. Some years back, I think before you were born, there was a management guru, a professor who was very well respected for his management books. His name was Dr. Peter, and he advanced something called the Peter Principle. Now, most people who weren't familiar with management thought it was kind of like a funny, ha-ha, joke kind of thing. It wasn't meant as a joke, although it sounds like it when you first hear it. The Peter Principle says that all managers will rise to their level of incompetence, and then they'll stay there. All managers will rise to their level of incompetence, and then they'll stay there. Yeah, that's funny, but it's not. You are a new employee. You've just gotten your brand spanking new degree from this fine institution of higher education, a business degree, and you get your first job in Megacorp. Okay, Megacorp hired you, and you are doing really well. I mean, you're just an animal. You're making spreadsheets dance. You're doing database work. You're clearing out all these old things that hadn't been taken care of in ages. And you're just a darn crackerjack. And you're in a meritocratic company. You'll be noticed by your bosses. Oh, you know, you're really something. After a year or so, we're going to elevate you a level. Because you're so good at what you did. Okay, well, yeah. And there you are. You're still good. You're incredible. You're a beast. Every morning, everyone steps back. Oh, here he comes. He's cool. Yeah, uh-huh. And so after another year or two, you're given another a raise and an elevation in your position. And there again. Just the hotshot, the crackerjack, the upstanding young stud of the year. And this keeps going over a period of 10 years. You're being elevated in every new higher level position you do great in. But then there's this one day. It's a quiet day around the office, but you know, there's the chit-chat and there's friendly banter. And all of a sudden, everyone gets silent. And then all of a sudden, after that, the loudspeaker system starts playing this music.
Ba 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 ba.
And into the office walks the CEO in black with a shiny helmet. And he strides up to your desk. You have not failed me. More, more, more. Luke, I am your father. I want you to be the new CFO of the company, the chief financial officer of the company. Together we can rule the galaxy. Join me or die. Now, here's the problem. You can't do it. You know damn well you can't do that job. You know you cannot do that job. It is beyond you. It is beyond your skill set.
I will pay you $500,000 a year. You will get a company car and the keys to the executive washroom. That's right. You will see me at the urinal peeing. Do we have a deal?
What are you going to say?
I'd be in.
You're in. Almost all of you would. Even though you can't do the job. Say it. Like, really? I mean, do you really think I'm going to let you get into that battle on that Death Star with me? No, I'm too smart for that. No. If we're going to have a lightsaber duel to the end, it's going to be at a White Castle. You know, I know the terrain. Know your battlefield. Choose it well. Sun Tzu, Art of War. You think? No. You're not going to kill me in there. Are you nuts? You sneak in on me there. I'm going to. I have had people sneak in on me. They're in the executive bathroom. I don't even turn around. I say, "Does Darth Vader need to choke a bitch?" Weirdest ass class I've ever taught. Yes. Anyway.
Now we know he gets all the keys out.
Yeah, I know, right? You know, what the heck? You know, perquisites. Yeah, it's located at the YMCA. The YMCA. Okay, now, where the hell was I? Concentrate, people. Look. The point, though, is that he rose to his level of incompetence, and he will stay there. So when you walk into a business and you are the employee for the first time, you come in for your first day, you've got your little backpack and your Hello Kitty notepad and your little beanie cap on. Hi, guys, I'm new here. The first thing you do is look around, because everyone you look at is either on his or her road to incompetence or has found his or her level of incompetence. That's the Peter principle. Incompetence is how it works. You will keep rising. That's why we have head football coaches that suck. They have finally risen to where they are incompetent. We have senators and representatives and presidents who have risen to their level of incompetence, and that's where they will stay. Managers are the same way. And they are an agency cost because they are not competent to do their jobs. So what they're going to do is they're going to find ways to keep their job. What are you going to do? You can't do this job, and there you are, and you don't want Darth to choke a bitch on you. So how are you going to handle it? You'll give it to the people who can do this stuff. You'll keep them happy. You'll pay them well. You'll bully them if you have to. You'll replace skill with anger, with toughness, with talk, because you can't do the job. So you will use other skill sets that you do command to keep yourself in your position. I have met so many managers who are not capable of doing their job. So how do they handle it? They are just mean-ass bullies to the people under them. That's how they keep. And they'll find plenty of people who will crawl to them. That's one of the things I hope to God you will avoid, is letting yourself become some slave of a bully manager who can't do his job, so he has other people do it for him. Hence what you saw here at the beginning of this lecture, before this lecture. What was I supposed to do? Yell at that young lady? She's just doing her job, and she wants to keep her job, and she wants to make her boss happy. You'll see it everywhere. Know it. There's a problem here, though. In everything I've been talking about, agent-principal relationships, there are actually two flavors of them. Remember I told you that the principal is responsible for monitoring and enforcement of the covenants of the contract with the agent are the responsibility of the principal to ensure get done. But think back to that parent-child relationship. The child is the principal, and the parent is the agent. How does a child monitor and enforce? Think of a doctor-patient relationship. The doctor is the agent, and you're the principal. He's there to maximize your health. But you don't know medicine. I mean, sure, you know everything you should know by reading WebMD and Wikipedia. But you know damn well you don't know anything about medicine. And if you're under anesthesia, you can't monitor and enforce. A lawyer is the agent of his client, but you don't know the law. You don't even know how to go into a courtroom, what courtroom you would have to go in. You are completely at the mercy. The shareholders can't go in as a body and say, let's look at these financial statements. They just can't do it. They have to rely upon. There's a defect in the agency relationship. So, in other words, you would have the normal agency relationship where the principal monitors and enforces. That's his or her responsibility. But there are these special relationships where the principal has a permanent defect in his or her ability to monitor and or enforce. It's a persistent. It's part of the relationship. The relationship is agent-principal, but there's something in there that is permanently embedded, or at least persistently embedded, that prevents the principal from effectively monitoring and enforcing. That's a very special kind of agency relationship. We have a name for that kind of agency relationship. It's called fiduciary. Fiduciary relationship. This is a very special one. It goes back far. Now law, statutory law, talks and talks about fiduciary relationships. Thou shalt not, thou shall, and all that kind of stuff. But it is far deeper than statutory law. It is common law. It is ancient tribal law. My agency is for something that cannot defend itself on this earthly plane. The Templar Knight, who is charged with monitoring and enforcing the will of God on earth. The doctor who is under the Hippocratic oath, do no harm. The lawyer who will jealously advocate for his client, regardless of whether his client is guilty or innocent. The parent who will stand in front of his child and protect that child because a child can't protect itself. Black's Law Dictionary lays it out very succinctly. Fiduciary duty, according to Black, is the highest duty implied by law. Now, this carries double weight. Fiduciary duty is the highest duty implied by law. First things first, highest. That means that there are no rankings. If you have two fiduciary duty on two fronts, you don't order them. You don't rank them. Well, this is highest and this is higher highest. No, they are highest. There is no ranking. And then this one, implied. That's common law. That's common law. Ancient. Timeless law. It goes beyond the pompous politicians of the day. It goes beyond the lectures from the experts. It goes to the very foundation of what makes us a civilized people. Implied by law, the highest duty. It is characterized by three pillars. Trust. Loyalty and fidelity, which means faithfulness. Trust, loyalty, and fidelity. So if you're a normal agent, It's the principal's job to keep your butt under control, watch you, and enforce the rules. But in a fiduciary relationship, you as the agent are on your own, and you are living at your highest level of responsibility because you are living past the times, and you are binding the past to the present to make the future. And remember, fiduciary duty is the highest. So when you take on all these different roles where you have fiduciary duty, you are at peril. Because fiduciary duty is not ordered in terms of what is higher and what is not. So I ran a corporation. I've run many, run most into the ground except this last one. But I was working my ass off every night, 8, 10, 11 o'clock at night, working on the books, working on some marketing harebrained scheme, writing letters, sending primitive email that we had at that time. And, you know, I was by fiduciary duty, I was bound to the owners of the company. I was one of them, but there were other ones. And that was fiduciary duty, the highest duty implied by law. Trust, loyalty, and fidelity, all of that. Do it all. Put all of your effort into that. Well, I also had a family. I had a marriage. You see, a marriage is, the agents in a marriage have fiduciary duty because a marriage can't watch you. The marriage is just a piece of paper until it is given life by the agents. The Constitution is just a piece of paper until it is given life by its agents. Most religions see their gods as dying unless the agents of those gods, the people on earth, pay attention to them and follow them. So you see, I had a fiduciary duty to a marriage, but I also had a couple of kids. I had a fiduciary duty to them. So there I was, fiduciary duty one, my corporation that I worked for. Fiduciary duty two, a marriage. Fiduciary duty three, kids. Well, you see, something can't work when you keep doing things like that your whole life without having a really darn good plan. And I'll tell you what happens in the end. It happened to me. One night, I had fulfilled my fiduciary duties for my corporation. Man, I had been an animal that day. And I got home about 10 o'clock that night, and the home was dark. Everyone was gone. That was the end of it. You see, fiduciary duty is something that will take care of itself. You don't handle your marriage properly, well, by God, it's going to go away. You don't handle your kids properly, well, by God, don't be surprised when they don't consider you their agent anymore. You don't handle your corporation properly, well, why are you surprised when it dies and your shareholders take an ass bath because of you? So you see, at the end of the day, choose your fiduciary relationships very carefully. Lay out your plan. Otherwise, you will, like me, someday go home to a very dark house and a very lonely remainder of your life. That's all I have for you today and for the rest of your lives. Thank you.